You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Huberman, of course, previous of Investors Chronicle, the editor there, and now at Vox, head of content. And on a weekly basis, we go through some stock screeners. And we've gone through Zulu stock screener, dividends. John, what's this week's?
Pricing power. So we're looking for shares that can push price increases through in the face of inflation. And as we can imagine, they're very hard to find. But we've got a few that we can have a look at.
Yeah, well, I think we'll come up with, 28 or 30 stocks there, ranging from BHP Group at the top there, which is £161 billion company, to FinCap at the bottom, £33 million. I did look through quite a few of these, and I thought, what am I after? I'm looking for, because there's lots of companies there with lots of acquisitions and all that stuff. I thought, okay, maybe that's quite good. And I couldn't find anything. But what took your fancy first, Joe? Anything? I mean, we could both pick one, of course, every week. What did you look for in this? Because there's many different columns, isn't there, to look at. I mean, there's operating margins are quite like, and all that stuff. What do you look at? Take us through the columns that's piqued your interest.
Yeah, so basically what we're trying to do, there is no metric, there's no one metric that tells you whether a company has pricing power or not. So people often talk about, companies like Unilever, in the sort of consumer goods space with branded products that people are prepared to cough up for. And that allows them to when costs get high, when input costs increase, they can just simply put their prices up without affecting volume too much. But there is, as I said, no one metric that can highlight that in a company. And actually, companies like Unilever do sometimes struggle to pass price increases on.
Yeah.
We hear about consumers trading down, and Unilever didn't actually pop up in this screen, probably because the margins are a bit thin. So what I'm looking for is good operating margins, but more importantly, that those margins are not forecast to fall, that they've held steady over an extended period. So I've looked over 5 years. And the same with earnings. We're looking for earnings growth and earnings that have held steady, are in positive average territory for the last 5 years. I also don't want companies that are too expensive. So I put a limit on the PE ratio of 25, which is still quite punchy. And then we're looking for some quality metrics as well, like return on equity, which I've set a minimum of 15, and we're looking for companies with reasonably good operating cash conversion, so they turn their profits into cash flow. And pretty much all of the companies that came out on this screen are over 100% of that, except one, which is Somero, which I do like. So that's what we're looking for. That should hopefully give us some companies that are able to essentially that show they have some stability in the profitability they can generate.
Yeah, I did look at Somero because they're on the podcast years ago. But I thought, okay, because they do these sort of concrete levelling machines, they laser-guided concrete levelling machines big companies, building stuff. And I thought, hang on, if we're in for a downturn, is that going to suffer? I kept thinking now, if we're into a slower economic environment, what's going to suffer here? What's going to hold up? That's what I thought. I thought, maybe building, construction, will that suffer? I think, it probably will, won't it?
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, as it happens, I actually own these shares. I mean, I think it's a really, really good company. It's expanding rapidly. It's kind of unique in its field. This is something we spoke about last week, that moat, because it's such a niche that you don't get too many competitors coming in and essentially competing on price, which is one reason why Somero's held up as a pricing power share. But you're right, there's cyclicality in it, and that's reflected in a really low PE. It's about just under 8, the forecast PE. So, yeah, I've got these. I'm hanging on to them, but I think you're right. I think it's susceptible to any extended period of economic weakness.
Yeah, yeah. And just looking at the operating margins here, I mean, pretty much all of them, aren't they, above 17%? So that's good. And you see you've got operating margin changes, how it's changed over the last 5 years, and it's all looking pretty positive. So I went last week, first time. You go first this time, John. What's your pick?
Okay, so I'm going to go for Games Workshop, which is a bit controversial. It's one of the first things we wrote about when I set up Investability, which is my last firm. But we really worried about that company on the basis of valuation. So it's a great company, no doubt about it. But like many companies on the market at the time, you know, and we're talking sort of autumn last year, late September, autumn, you know, valuations had really run away. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen since is that, you know, as inflation has risen, highly rated shares like Games Workshop got sold off quite heavily. And, you know, is it susceptible to an economic slowdown? You know, it sells a kind of niche product again. They're expensive. It sells sort of these model miniatures, Warhammer. Mm-hmm. Model miniatures. So yeah, you know, if people are finding that their budgets are stretched, you know, it could be a purchase that they cut back on. That said, you know, there's a lot to like about this company. The shares have derated quite sharply. So we're now looking at a forward PE of 17, which is much more reflective of the sort of quality of this company and the sort of average rates of growth over many years. I mean, forecast EPS is predicted to slow, but it's still in positive territory. And I think in positive territory in a market like this, in an economy like this, I still think that's a pretty strong performance.
Yeah. And it's one of those hobbies, though, that people tend to be addicted to and never let up on, regardless. It's almost like smoking, you know. Even in downturns, people don't give up these kind of treats. So they these kind of, you know, obsessions they have. And, you know, it's a hobby that's it's resilient, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right. So there's this thing called, I mean, you can call it the lipstick effect. So, you know, it's like a small treat that people don't give up on, even if, you know, in times of economic weakness, they might stop, say, buying cars or moving house or, you know, really big purchases. Consumer electronics is struggling a bit for much the same reasons. But, you know, we're not talking hundreds and hundreds of pounds per sale here. We're talking a sort of nice, repeatable, often relatively low value product. So, yeah, people who are into this hobby are likely to keep buying, in my view.
Yeah, it is tricky. Like you said, the cyclicality and an impending sort of economic slowdown, if you really be, you know, fussy about it, there aren't many businesses that won't get affected. On this list I was looking through, and I could make a case for most companies being affected by an economic downturn, but I remember a while back I did run a screener myself, and I was looking for some of the best performing shares over the last 5 years, and I did screen by like the top line growth of 20% and earnings per share 20%, and I think this company came up, Games Workshop. Also in there was like Boohoo and JD Sports and all that, you know, and they've all come off, you know, which is I suppose is an opportunity, because they've got, like I said, a robust business model, and you know, and it's going to continue because they have done it. You know, they've done it for the last 5-10 years. Why won't it continue? It's just an advantage. This dip off in the share price, surely an advantage. You know, to tuck a few away, shouldn't you? Really, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely a case for that. I mean, you know, whether things get cheaper still, who knows? And you know, as I've written, as we wrote actually last week, in our view from Vox, you know, yeah, inflation may sort of plateau, and that will reduce that derating pressure, but we still have earnings risk around the corner. So yes, yeah, I mean, you know, there is definitely a case for starting to buy now, certainly drip feeding into the market, but you know, I think it's far too early to say whether things, you know, have reached their nadir. So yeah, I mean, Games Workshop there is a lot cheaper than it was, and you know, if you were buying a, you know, well over 90p a share, then at 90 pounds a share, and at 65 pounds a share, you know, it's definitely much more attractive than it was. And the business hasn't really changed. If anything, it's changed for the better. You know, they're putting a lot of investment in warehousing and in their infrastructure and headcount. And, you know, like everyone, they've suffered from, you know, the cost effects of inflation and supply chain pressures. But, you know, they're probably in, you know, a better position than most companies to manage it quite well. So I'm sort of turning on a sixpence here and saying, all right, Games Workshop is on my watch list now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, looking back, where we in September last year, they were 123 quid a share, pretty much. now they're down to 65. So, you know, how much is of the worry is priced in that? Well, the markets, it's hard to say, isn't it? It's, you know, how much is priced in? But like you say, if you're getting it at, you know, historically decent PE and the growth is still there, then, you know, over time, if you're drip feeding in, it should be fine, you know? It's a good average, isn't it, you get here?
Absolutely. You know, and on the quality front, it scores incredibly highly. You know, returns on equity, returns on capital are, you know, they're off the chart, really. It's a great company. It's a great company. I mean, there are, just sorry, before we hear your pick, Justin, I mean, there are a couple of other companies like this on the list, Auto Trader and Rightmove, which, you know, they are stellar businesses. You know, they're essentially, you know, software platforms with really high margins. You know, they generally seem unaffected by what's going on in the underlying industries that they have, but the valuations just got ahead of themselves again. And, you know, and I worry more about the earnings risk for these companies because actually I think, you know, the car market's going to get a lot tougher, the housing market's going to get a lot tougher. And as you say, Games Workshop, you know, lipstick effect, small treat, people are going to carry on buying.
Yeah. It's funny, is it? Because I was, you know, I did look at Auto Trader and Rightmove, and they're these companies that have sort of that first mover advantage, you know, into these portals. They grabbed a lot of space. I mean, Auto Trader, of course, was a publisher before that, a real publisher. But they, you know, they're the first big movers, weren't they, to take the space up, and they remained the kingpins there. You know, there's lots of other competitors out there, but once you've got that advantage of being the first and the biggest, it's if you do well and keep doing well, it's hard to topple them, isn't it? Because in fact, I've had it on the market on the podcast for a few times, and they're doing very well. But they've got not far off the same amount of agents on their books as Rightmove, but on the market is sub 100 million market cap, and Rightmove is what, 3-4 billion or 5 billion, something like that, market cap. But the difference is Rightmove charges their agents around about £1,000 per month, and on the market charge 188 quid. But a lot of those agents they've got on free contracts they're converting right now, so they don't have to get any more agents on the market. All they need to do is convert the people they have, and I've signed up to all three portals app-wise, and they're true in what they say. They are the first. Any new property that comes in the market, I get generally through on the market first, and then Zoopla and Rightmove come through as well. So it's amazing just the value disconnect between those two companies, and that's just by having first mover advantage, isn't it? That prime location of being there first, being the biggest, you know, signing ever up first. Yeah, I did look at those. In the end, I went with Future PLC.
Okay.
But even then, I thought, you know, in a downturn, do people start cutting subscriptions? But a lot of their stuff is on websites and there's videos and all that stuff. Just to explain what they do, Future PLC, they say they're a future of the global platform business for specialist media with diversified revenue streams. Its content, this is an amazing stat, reaches 1 in 3 adults online in the UK and the US. So they've built and acquired this company. The media division is high growth with complementary revenue streams, including e-commerce for products and services and events, digital advertising, including advertising within newsletters and video. And they've got people will have heard of their brands. They've got Tech Radar, PC Gamer, Tom's Guide, Go Compare. They've got Marie Claire, Space.com. I've not heard of that one. Space.com, but it's a good portal. That.
And they bought MoneyWeek.
Yeah,
not
did they?
Too long ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're acquisitive, you know. And actually, I think it's really interesting, you know, somebody actually building a large media business when actually a lot of people, you know, have long predicted the death of media, and especially paid media.
Yeah, exactly. They've, I mean, I think it was back in, if you look at the chart, go back to 2015, 2016, that's when they went from, I think, real media publishing, wasn't it, to sort of online, and they started saying, right, we've got the strategy now, we're just going to sort of generate and acquire lots of these niche, you know, well-followed, you know, high-branded sort of companies and online sites, and they started doing that, and it was a bit of volatility from between 2015, 2016, but since then, they've gone gangbusters. But again, you know, if you look at the same kind of chart as Game Workshop, you know, if you look back, exactly the same. I mean, Future was like 95 pence back in 2016 when they started this online acquisition spree, and they went up to 40 quid in August 2021, and now they're back to £17.43. But I just looked, I mean, you know, as they get bigger, you know, operationally they get better because they can serve advertisers strongly. all different kinds, you know, very similar sort of, you know, brands or whatever. The adverts are very, you know, highly attractive and very targeted. And so that ups their average payment per advertiser. So, and they say that the magazine division focuses on publishing specialist content, combined global circulation over 3 million delivered through more than 131 magazines and 735 bookazines published a year. And just if you, I just go back to the last set of results. And the market cap, by the way, 2.1 billion. They had 25 million of cash. And total debt. Well, do you know what? Oddly, they've taken out a bit of a loan here. And I'm just looking, but the growth is amazing. If you look at the growth, they've gone from, for the interims, they went 48% growth. Now, you know, for a company that's $2 billion, that's good. From, and that was up to 404 million top line. Operating profit, again, 48%, from 59 million up to 88 million. And that was interim results the 30th of June. September to March they are. So, but they haven't had their full results out yet. But yeah, but the growth is phenomenal in a big company like this. And I was just looking through it, and price earnings decent, about 20 or less than that now, 17. But operating margin of 22%, and it just says as they grow, pretty much the operating margin just grows as well, you know, because they can serve across many different sites, and the value per user goes up pretty much. So it, yeah, it's a, and I just looked at the outlook. They did a trading update on the 17th of March, and they said encouraging start of the second half has continued, supported by anticipated return to audience growth as COVID comparatives were fully lapped and the resilience in our diversified business model. So in addition, the group continues to benefit from the effect of its diversified audiences, revenue streams and operating leverage, excellent cash conversion and strong balance sheet. As a result, they say they reconfirm they're on track to achieve full year results, the guidance for 2022. I don't know what that is. I try to look it up. But obviously they seem quite positive there. But I just thought the drop-off has been massive, from 40 quid down to £17. So, but yet they're still growing at a heck of a rate. But it's almost like, you see, even with Games Workshop, that last tick up, it's almost the final run of the bull market from almost April last year to August. There was almost a stratospheric rise in the share price, you know, and then all of a sudden it topped out and it's rolled over, you know. But again, where's the bottom? No one knows. All you can do, I suppose, is invest in a good business at a decent valuation and scale into it. It really, I suppose, isn't it, you know?
I think you're right. I mean, you know, and I think you're right about the share prices. You know, that was the sort of last hubris of the bull market. Yeah. You know, both companies have had a fairly savage derating since, but it doesn't really reflect where their businesses are. Yeah. And as you say, future is growing very strongly. I mean, the balance sheet is strong. I mean, it's about, you know, the debt is, the leverage is about 25%. So, you know, not too bad. And actually both of these companies, you know, when volume starts to increase, you know, as you say, that scale, that operating leverage really has an impact on profit growth. It does work in reverse, but certainly, you know, there's no sign of that in future, even if there is some sign of that at Games Workshop.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, you know, look at the chart. It's sort of going back to November 2020. It sort of it had a bit of resistance of £20, and it tried to break it there, and then it ticked back down to sort of £18 to £17, and then it broke that £20 level in April of 2021, and it went nuts under 40 quid, and now it's just back below that. So you could say a bit of support resistance on this level. Maybe it's a trading range between 17 and 20 quid. Who knows? But but yeah, again, you know, look at good businesses, like some big operating margins, since Screener, and hopefully they'll return to their past glories once this. Do you know, what's your thoughts on where we are at the markets at the moment? Because, I mean, part of me thought, you know, we're coming towards sort of halfway point for the S&P, but AIM all shares been, you know, in this bear market have 10 months, and generally they last like 12 to 14. But S&P's only been, you know, and everything tends to follow the S&P 500. That's only been in this bear market now for 5-6 months, and that average is 12, 14 months. And part of me thinks now inflation does stick around for a long time. It's, you know, I mean, even commodities have taken a bit of a rollover initially, but they seem to be bouncing again. And I think that's the way it's going to be. They're not going to just, you know, drop off and fall away. They're going to drop and bounce back up and drop and bounce back up. And that's because I don't think inflation will go down very quickly. And so I think we'll have volatile markets trading in a range, maybe even a leg lower for a while. But I think it's going to be a tricky market, I think, for a while. Do you?
Yeah, I think the one word I would use to describe it is chaotic. we've obviously got a Fed tightening cycle that's begun. We're gonna see the same in. We're going to see the same in Europe. We've obviously got interest rates rising here. You know, the headwinds for equities are massive, absolutely massive. And, you know, even if inflation, I think we sort of speculated that it might plateau, or if you start to see some of the big inflationary pressures from things like energy in particular start to fade away, then those headwinds might ease somewhat. But as you alluded to, we saw a sell-off in commodities and a bounce back again. It's just chaos. And really hard for investors to know which way to turn, which is why I say, you know, find these solid companies, find companies that, you know, they're going to be around for a while. Try not to overpay, which is what we're looking for here. And you should be right in the long term.
Yeah, exactly. And we get two points to this, isn't it? I was listening to a podcast, I think it was Barron's or something, where they were saying about, bear markets. You see some great rallies in a bear market, essentially, because sometimes you see that's where shorts covering, you know, covering up the shorts and it bounces, but then it isn't sustained. And some of the rallies you can have are amazing. And then people, what you get then, a sort of second wave of people coming into the market thinking, that's the bottom. And then they come in and they get some more bad data come out. You're like, oh, it is in the bottom. And it will jump back out again. You know, so it's very volatile. Isn't it?
Absolutely. I think you know, if you see a bear market rally and think that is the bottom, then you've got to pinch yourself, because if you rush in, you're potentially exit liquidity for the real smart money somewhere else. So be careful. Be very careful.
Yeah, be careful. Pick good businesses on good valuations that are growing and scaling slowly, because there's plenty of time. And that's I keep saying that. I mean, there's always positives of bear market. I mean, I've seen companies put out some results recently, smaller caps and micro caps, and they would rally strongly, you know. And you get a lot of people jumping in fear of missing out, and then the price will pull back a little bit. Doesn't happen at the moment in bear markets. Literally, they put a bit of news out, and unless they're massively exceeding expectations, nothing really rallies, or it's not sustained. People just taking profits straight away, aren't they? And all of a sudden just rolls back to a low or even below the low. So you've got plenty of time in bear markets, you know, to research and scale in. Nothing is going to go straight up, you know, like inflation won't come straight down. Nothing will go straight up, you know.
No, absolutely. You know, I think markets can be treading water at best for a while. And I think you're right. In line is the new profit warning at the moment. It's companies have really got to smash their expectations to make headway. It's really hard for companies to do that. Give them the sort of economic backdrop. It's that time. You know, it's often said the stock market is not the economy, but they're probably as close as they have been for some time.
Yeah, marvelous stuff. Okay, and you're going to put the screen on the website there so people can see all the constituents there. And if people, you know, want to suggest a screener, you up for that, John?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Marvellous stuff. Cool. Speak you next week.
Thanks, Justin. Speak soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.